Hi, everybody. AKA, my nickname is Momo, so you may hear. My right is July 12th, 2006. It's 8 days after my oldest sister passed away from ovarian cancer. And I have to tell you, the day that she died really brought a lot of pain in my life. And up to that point, while she was dying, I actually started to drink quite heavily, and here really my drinking. And I have to tell you that there was a lot of shame in that. There was a lot of sadness in that. There was a lot of humiliation in that. However, the greatest free being in this program, and I love Alcoholics Anonymous. It is such a fabulous program. I was raised in a family, 6 kids, big Catholic family. Both parents are alcoholic. Both parents owned a restaurant. My mother owned a bar. My dad was in the bar. Okay? I went to work with my father when I was 4 years old. I had a little apron. I used to help the waitresses, and I would watch my dad drink. He would sit me on the bar stool, and at 2 o'clock in the morning, 4, 5, 6 years old, I would be sitting there trying to get his attention because all I wanted was my dad to be home. But instead, he was married to the bottle. So at a very young age, I realized that you really had to join him if you really wanted to have any time with him. And so, therefore, you know, alcohol was really a part of my life from very young. And I suspect that my mom probably drank while I was in her womb. In terms of, she drank with all of us. So there are some signs. I feel that I've had some soft signs of fetal alcohol syndrome in my life, and how that played out in my life is that I never felt like I could sit still. I don't know about you, but alcoholism really does do a lot in terms of making somebody feel discontented, irritable, right? I was so irritable all the time, even as a child, and yet I had this happy face on. But inside of myself, I have to tell you that I never felt like I fit in. I never felt like I measured up. I always felt like I had to do something in order for you to love me, whatever that may be. So, therefore, with my dad, I did a lot in his restaurant. I was the greatest kid. I had a little halo on top of my head, and I want you to know that I was the favorite child. Well, that's what I thought I was, okay, the favorite child. But I really, really wasn't, because my dad could really care less about me and what was going on in my life. All he was interested in was his alcohol. And so alcoholism really did play a huge part in my life. And I can remember them having a big, huge party. I can remember going, and I can remember taking my first drink, and I had a blackout. Because my friends told me exactly what I did. I go, I don't remember any of that. I don't remember that. I don't remember that. And I remember as a really small kid having a blackout. So the course for me was that I started drinking at a very, very young age, but I didn't drink that long. I had little snippets of drinking in my life. I have to tell you that I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, I think, through the back door. I was in another program for many, 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 many years, did the steps, read the big book. Food was my thing. I became a huge compulsive overeater, binged on food, loved food, can remember the first day that I ate something, and it just took me off into several different directions. But I have to tell you that it really set up the framework for my alcoholism. It really set the framework up for me drinking, because I still got the same feelings from drinking as I did as eating. And so, therefore, throughout my whole childhood, I was really, like, enmeshed in all the food that I could eat. I just wanted to eat because I didn't want to feel the pain any longer. And I was just so sad all the time. I had a learning disability in school. I suspect it was probably because my home life was just really crazy and out of control. Sundays, I don't know about you, being raised in a Catholic family, my dad, all of us would march down the middle of that aisle, you know, in the church, and we'd go right to the front pew, and he wanted everybody to see how wonderful we were. But really, to tell you the truth, it was a facade. And that's what alcoholism is. It's a facade. We put something out. Can everybody hear me back there? Okay. I love it. Anyway, so it's a facade. And so I hid behind this facade, and our whole family hid behind this facade. But really what it was is our family was really struggling. All of us were struggling in our family. And I have to tell you that my self-esteem, I didn't have any. I don't even know what that word meant. I had no self-worth. And I did things to myself that just kind of validated those feelings that I had. I don't know about you, but I can tell you that alcoholism makes me or made me feel apart from. I never felt like I was in the middle. I always felt like I was looking from the outside in. And actually, for a long, 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 long time until just recently, and I have to be very honest with you about that, is that I finally feel that I have arrived in terms of myself. And I really believe that doing the steps and really reading the big book and understanding the foundation of that big book has really, really catapulted me into a different dimension in terms of my spiritual life. And they say really what it is, it's a spiritual malady. And if you do not enlarge your spiritual life, I will tell you that this disease will bite you in the butt. When you least expect it, you think you got it all wired. I know for me, I thought I had it all wired like 3, 4, 5 years ago when I first came in. I got a sponsor. She was really great for me. But unfortunately, all of us, you know what, don't really honor and respect anonymity. And unfortunately, my four-step, bits and pieces of my four-step were actually disclosed in meetings. And that really bothered me. It's like, okay, now how am I supposed to trust? You know, how am I supposed to actually entrench myself in this program? So what I did is I decided that, you know, it's my responsibility. It's my responsibility to actually not hold that resentment against her, to really get myself going again in AA. So what I did is I actually stepped out of AA. Not that I drank. I didn't drink. But I really felt that my emotional life was really bad. I was very reactive. My emotions were up and down. I was depressed. I was happy. I was sad. I was all those emotions. And I could not rein my emotions in. I know that for me, my disease is about my emotions. It's about my mental state. It's the way that I think. It's my attitude. It's really about my perception of things. And so what I really did was I sat down and I said, okay, am I going to allow this sponsor to not, how do I say this, not allow myself the freedom of recovery because she divulged part of my four-step? So what? She divulged part of my four-step. Not all of us are well in these rooms, right? You know, for me, for a long time, I knew that. So I said to myself, okay, and I'm not well either. So how can I really make a right out of this wrong and not hold the resentment? So I clipped along and clipped along, and then I really actually did not get a sponsor for quite a while. And so I was looking for a sponsor 2 years ago. I went to a step study and a big book study at somebody's home, and I just jumped into the big book with both feet. And I will tell you that I read things in the big book. I swear to God, they were not in the big book when I read it 20 years ago. I know it, okay? They're playing tricks on me. I knew it. And I go, I never read that. When did that get in there? And so the interpretation of that big book, it was so great because I really got excited about, finally, the light bulb started going on. This is what I need to do. The big book teaches me and teaches everybody in AA a framework. It's a blueprint. How am I going to conduct my life in sobriety? And I get really passionate about that because it really is about conducting myself in sobriety. Do I go out there? Am I a jerk to everybody? Or am I kind and loving, helpful? When do I help? When do I not help? When do I enable? When do I not enable? And you know what? I had to really do this complete, like, gut-wrenching four-step inventory. And I need to back up for just a minute. My sponsor actually is here tonight, which I am so excited. And I was looking around for a sponsor, and I said, oh, okay, you guys, do you know anybody who can be my sponsor? Somebody says, well, why don't you call Marla? So I go, okay, I'll call Marla. So I cold called her. You don't know me, but we sponsor. And she's like really nice to me on the other end of the phone, right? And so she goes, you know, you have a lot of guts. And I go, no, I just am really ready. And so she was there for me, and it was fabulous in terms of her sitting with me and doing a very thorough four-step. With my four-step, I have to tell you that it was really hard for me to write everything down because I didn't want anybody to know those secrets that I was going to take to the grave. That my emotional life made me, I think, act out and do things to myself, to others, that I really am shameful about. Not only did I do them to myself and to others, however, I did them to my family. And I take hostages. I don't know about you, but I take hostages. I am dependent. Not any longer. That used to be me then. Very dependent on other people to make me happy. So that emotional dependency was really a thing that I wanted to be free of for a very, very, very long time. And with this program, it really has released that emotional dependency that I feel on people, places, things, situations. Because I can tell you, I can take any situation and mix it up in my head, okay, and really make it fit for me. It's like, oh, they did that to me. I'm angry. You know what? I'm going to be pissed off for 2 years because you said one bad thing about me. Now, how long do you carry a grudge? And it's very interesting what my mind does because in a moment, I can switch from one thing to another in a split second. And that is perception. So for me, my disease is I had to really get rid of all the old ideas, all the old emotions, all of my old attitudes. It says it in the big book. You have to have a profound psychic change, a personality change. And I am so grateful today because I feel, finally, that that's what I have. It's so nice to feel that, to feel calm and to feel compassionate about people. And it's a genuine compassion about what is going on with my fellow Americans, what's going on with my fellow people around me, no matter who they are, inside of these rooms and outside of these rooms. So I think today I'm the person that I really, really want to be. I just got off a plane 2-3 hours ago, I think, from Costa Rica. And I love Costa Rica. And my sister is in recovery. She lives in Costa Rica. She broke her foot, and she says to me, can you come down to help me? Yeah, I'll get on a plane, and I'm going to go down, and I'm going to help you. And so I got to talk AA for 8 days with her. We actually got in the car. I did all the driving. I did more dishes last week than I have done in 2 months, okay? I had to take care of my little great nephew who's 2 years old, doesn't speak any English, right? He is fabulous, speaks Spanish, and he is just the bomb. All right, so I can appreciate his little essence today because I was so calm the whole time I was there. And that's really because of the program. The program gives me those tools that not only do I take these tools in the big book, what I do is I take them in all areas of my life, my work life, my relationships with my girlfriends, with people at my work. The principles are really there for a framework, and I love the framework. But my sister was really appreciative of that. And so I don't know if anybody has been to a foreign country and trying to find an AA meeting. Hard. We traveled an hour in the dark, and I can hardly see at nighttime, and I'm going, oh, my God. And I don't know if you know, but in Costa Rica, they ride their bicycles in the dark on the side of the road with no reflectors. So you're weaving in and out, two-lane highway, weaving in and out, and I'm praying the whole way, please, God, get us home safe. But what I really noticed about that is it says, are you willing to go to any length? And I, you know what? I am today. What do I need to do today to keep my sobriety? What do I need to do today for my emotional sobriety? The Grapevine. I love that little magazine. I love this. Bill W. actually wrote a great article in there. 50s. He talked about emotional sobriety. How he was so dependent on everybody and everything. And how he was so dependent on AA as well. Until he really started to really switch to look at his spiritual life. His dependencies were very entrenched. And I can tell you, being dependent on somebody has been very, very, very hard on me. Because it never allowed me to stand on my own two feet. Every day I ask God, what is it your will for me today? What do you want me to do? I do the two-way prayer. I write a question. I write. And then I see, is this my will or is it God's will? And I can tell you 9 times out of 10, if there's a shoulda, coulda, woulda, you know, in my writing, then whose? It's probably my will. But if I start to free flow and I do my writing and it just seems very loving and compassionate, I really believe that that's God, you know, speaking to me in many ways. One thing about the big book, and I love this book, as I said before, is that in the third edition, there's a page in there, page 449. Some of you may have the third edition. It's about acceptance, right? People, places, and things. That's the best paragraph that I think I have read. I have to allow other people to be who they are. And that's part of my sobriety today, is that I cannot put demands on everybody to be who I want them to be to fill my void. As a woman, I've had many things happen to me in my life, and I need you to know that I was in the Navy, loved it, loved when Jason shared about the Navy. I was thinking to myself, I turned to Mike and I go, oh my gosh, I hope I wasn't his counselor, because that's what I did in the Navy. I was a drug and alcohol counselor, right? Truth. And you know what? I always wanted to be a part of AA, but I wasn't in AA. I just took them to AA meetings, okay? And I loved it. But I always loved AA meetings. I loved the roundup. And I would always get really excited because we go to the dance and I have all the patients and we go and we have a great time. And I always feel kind of sad and depressed after I would get out of there because I didn't feel like I was a part of. I didn't feel like I was a part of it because, you know what, at that time, I didn't know that I was really alcoholic. Like I said, my drinking kind of took off after a breakup of a relationship about 7 or 8 years ago. I drank with my partner, but I had that controlled drinking, and I blamed him for his alcoholism, always on his butt about his alcoholism, about you drank too much, you ended up blackout, right? And then what happens? He leaves, and what do? I get the bottles. Not one bottle. It's two bottles. Then three bottles. And then four bottles. And then I do the drunk dialing. My family was so sick of me drunk dialing. Oh, they hated it. Oh, were you with your girlfriends again? Yes, I was with my girlfriends again. But you know what I was covering up? The pain of loss. I've had a lot of loss in my life. Age 13, my mom died. Age 18, my dad died 2 days before I graduated from boot camp. I was in the Navy as well. I loved the Navy. I loved it. Because you know what? The Navy was my surrogate father and mother. I learned that I had to follow rules and that I better shape up or else I was going to get kicked out. Right before I went in the Navy, I had a felony. I was, because I wanted to be a part of, I was stealing from a huge store that I worked at, and they caught me and all the rest of us. And they said, Navy or jail? I said, well, I'm going to the Navy. Why not? Right? Less of the two evils. So I went into the Navy. And it was a very good experience for me. I worked with the Marines, and I loved it. I was flew in the helicopter, search and rescue. That was very exciting to me. It was a great thing. I went overseas, and I say this because this happens to men and happens to women. I do know a lot of my sisters in sobriety have had a lot of sexual assault. I was sexually assaulted over in Japan by a Japanese who now is in prison for the rest of his life. It was not meant for me. It was meant for my roommate. And I have to tell you that in Japan, they have different cultures, and the culture is gomen asai money. You get paid off for any offense that somebody does to you. So talk about feeling re-victimized for the whole thing. It was a very sad thing. However, compartmentalized it, put it in the back of my head, went on my merry way, drank, right? Didn't want to remember, that kind of thing. But those kind of things kind of shaped somebody, and they shaped my life in many ways. My relationships with men, I don't know about you, but for me, I was looking for Mr. Right, you know, looking for the person of my dreams in bars, looking for the living amongst the dead. Right? Think about it. That's true. Think about it. I have to tell you that it's true. It's so true because I thought, you know what, these guys are going to be great and they're going to love me. And, you know, they didn't love me. I can just tell you the stories, you know. But where's my humility, you know? Thanks, Mike. You know, where's my humility, you know? I was using my body as a way to feel better about myself. And when, in fact, you know what, I never felt better about myself. Fast forward, I got married to a Marine, and that didn't work out. And he's a great guy; still talk to him today. Fast forward, I meet my second husband, great guy, two loving children. I was going to be a stepmom; was a stepmom for a year and a half. He gets pancreatic cancer and he dies. Year and a half. Since then, I want you to know that my life has been very interesting with men. Fast forward, meet this gentleman. He's one of our special forces, right? He's the one that drank. I thought I was going to fix him. I was going to fix him. So, I can fix you. Trust me, I can fix you. I can fix you. And really, to tell you the truth, trying to fix him really was my undoing. Because I looked at him and I didn't have to look at myself. And that's really what it's about, is taking a good look at self. And somebody said this once, I love this person in AA. He said, in AA, there are liars, they're cheats. Okay? There may be some pedophiles in here, who knows? But he goes, you know, not everybody that comes through this door, you know, even though they're here, not everybody works a program of recovery. And I thought about that, you know, and here I am, I was trying to be the best person I could be in this person's life. And I'm thinking, oh my God, so how can I do this, you know, without drinking? Well, in order for me to join him, I drank. Because I felt like if I joined him, then maybe I could get him to stop drinking. So ridiculous, okay? But I have to tell you, I really believe in my heart that the loneliness and the isolation that I felt inside of myself was really the piece of me that was trying to get filled up with the drinking. I just wanted the alcohol just to soothe that part of me because I was so lonely. I was really mad at God when he took my husband away, even though I thought I wasn't. Until I started really looking at myself, you know, a couple of years ago, you know what, to tell you the truth, I miss him every day, more so now than I did when he died 13 years ago. It's because, you know what, there's an emotional maturity that I have today about life. And because God does give us do-overs. I can do a do-over at any time during the day. I'm doing a do-over. I tell my colleagues at work, if I get upset about anything, which I try not to anymore, I go, I'm doing a do-over. I got to go outside, doing a do-over. And I come back in, and they're all laughing at me. Well, they have no clue that I'm in this program. But a do-over, do we not get do-overs every day? Every moment we can get a do-over, and I love the do-overs. And every day, I can look at that list, and I can go, okay, so what are my assets? What are my flaws? What do I need to change today? Am I having a bad self-esteem day today? Where is my self-worth today? Am I jealous? Am I envious? What's holding me back from grabbing onto the spiritual part of this program that I know that I deserve and that God wants me to have? Because what happens to me is I can put myself in a one down position faster than that. Faster than that. You look at me cross-eyed, and sometimes I think, oh my God, what's wrong with me? What did I do wrong? I've always felt, what did I do wrong? How did I cause it? I'm always saying that. And now I don't have to say that any longer. You know what? Maybe the person's having a bad day. It's not my fault. Maybe the person's not doing well today. So now I don't take the blame anymore. When things happen, I look at my part, I clean up my side of the street, and I go from there. Another part of my program are my friends that are scattered out throughout the room. I love my AA buddies. I love them. I can call them at any time and say, I'm having a really bad day today, and they will drop everything and say, okay, what's going on? 5 minutes on that phone is like a shot of adrenaline. It's kind of, wow, I feel good today. 99% of the time, I am doing okay. 99% of the time, I have a lot of energy. I'm really happy. Most of the time, I'm really happy. I have a smile on my face. But there's just that 5% sometimes that gets me in trouble. That 5% where I can focus on that 5% sometimes. They say in the big book, it's progress, not perfection. I can't be perfect, even though I tried for so many years to be perfect. I wanted to be perfect. I wanted to be perfect for you. Because if I was perfect, then you would love me. And if you can't love yourself, how do you expect somebody else to love you? And that's what I keep telling myself. You have to become lovable. I talk to myself all the time. Yeah, and I answer too. That's bad. It is bad. I'll be at my desk talking, and my girlfriend goes, do you know you're talking to yourself? I go, yes. Yes. It's so funny. She's really great. I love my girlfriend at work too. But for me, you know what? I have to constantly keep that inventory going. In the big book, you know, there's some pages that I read, 82 to 86. I read those pages. I read the third step prayer. I have all these little prayers around the house. When I feel like I need a boost, I read the prayers. I get the big book. I call somebody. I do what the program tells me to do. You know what? This program is not hard. To me, it's not hard. It's very simple. What's hard is me sitting in my own skin. I love what Jason said about feeling in the skin. I love that because I have for so many years have felt like, oh my gosh, I do not fit in my skin. My skin crawls. I don't feel good in my skin. And if anybody could see what was going on inside of me, they wouldn't like me either. They wouldn't like me, which is my perception. But this is a disease of perception. I said it before. And with the emotional sobriety, I have to be mature in the way that I depend on people. I want people to depend on me, but in a healthy way. And you know what? I sponsor, in my other program, I sponsored for many, many years. And in this program, I have found that I have not sponsored that much for many reasons. But recently, a lady had a step study at my home, and she needed a temporary sponsor, and now I have become her sponsor. And it has been so, wow, it's been so powerful for me. Because you know what? I'm not telling her what to do. I'm suggesting and recommending. And that's what my sponsor does for me. She recommends. And you know what? And if she sees some bullshit, she'll call the bullshit flag, which I like. She didn't pull any punches. And I think that that's important for me. And I may not want to hear it. Oh, I don't want to hear it. You know, I kind of like, okay, tell me. But then when I can do something about it. And the last thing I love is humor. I'm going to tell you a little story. This truly did happen. It was funny as hell. So, I work in a big place for the government. Okay? I call it going across the campus. So I had to go to a meeting, had all my stuff in my arms, right? And so, you know, the toilet seat covers that you have when you put on the top. Okay, so anyway, I'm going across campus, and it was nice sunny day, and all of a sudden I see something. I got my glasses on, and I'm looking, I'm going, oh, my God. Don't tell me. So I kind of bend down real nice and, you know, easy. And so I see and I turn around and I see this paper hanging off my butt, right? So I kind of pull it down and I pull it off and everything's just being really cool about it. So I get up and I go to my meeting and I take off my jacket and the other part is right here. I tell that story for a reason. I laughed my ass off. It was so funny. I mean, you know what? How can you not laugh at yourself, right? So, anyway, humor is a big part of my program. I love humor. I love to laugh. I love to be in the middle of things. I love to dance because dancing is an expression that I have that I can just let loose and let go and not be so constricted, not be so afraid of what people are going to think. And Latin music, you can really go. They have Zumba down there. And so, yeah, I mean, you just get those hips going and you get those Latin girls going. And they were like showing me how to do the shimmy and all that. And it was like, I loved it. And it was just so invigorating. I can't even tell you. But when I hear that Latin music, all I want to do is dance. But, you know, God today has given me so much. My family down in Costa Rica, I have two great, a niece and a nephew and a great nephew. And I am really, seriously, I am so much a part of their family. It's just they did a barbecue for me, and it was just, here's this little two-year-old bringing me flowers. Oh, I mean, what do you do with that? You know, what do you do with that? He's so innocent. And you know what? I believe for me that my innocence was robbed when I was a little kid in many ways. And so how do I give that back to myself? And I give that back to myself by being honest with myself, with being true to myself, by loving myself, by saying, you know what? It's going to be okay today, no matter what. Getting rid of the fear and, you know what? And bringing a lot of love into my life. Because for many years I lived in fear. I felt like I was going to be the bag lady. The bag lady. I retired from a job 38 years last year. 38 years I was working for the Navy. Long time. And now I have another job and it's my Schlesman money. So I can do anything I want. I love it. So, you know, today I have more money than I know what to do with. And that's scary. But you know what? I honor and respect that. I'm a good steward of my money because God tells me that He can do anything in all of my affairs. If it's relationships, money once again, sex, you name it, physical, whatever it is. And I appreciate that today. And I also appreciate my ability to be very responsible. And very organized, and I have a lot of determination. And in this program, if you have all of those things, even if you don't have those things, you can get those things. Determine to have a better life for yourself. Because I know with my determination and with a lot of help from all of you that, you know what, my life is better today. There's nothing like a group of alcoholics. I'm home. I feel it. I walk in the room and I love it. Just give me more. Give me more. And you know what? I have another sister who is not in recovery. She doesn't understand me at all. She doesn't get it. She never will get it. And that's okay today. I have another sister, kind of gets it, but doesn't really get it. Have a brother, doesn't get it. My sister and I, baby, we get it. So I'm very blessed today to have a family that, you know, with one sister that gets it. And when I call her and say, you know, I'm having a good day or a bad day, she gets it. And I'm grateful today because of that. And one last thing. I love this. And I just wanted to read this one thing. And to me, this says it all. A vision for you. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. And I think, to me, that says it all. There it is right there, what you need for me. I need to do steps 1 through 12 in that little tiny paragraph. I have to abandon myself to God as I understand Him for me. And I'm really grateful today. And thank you very much for letting me share.